Welcome to the Society of Advanced Bronchoscopy. This is The Way podcast. My name is Dominique Pepper, and in this podcast, we interview leaders and experts in advanced bronchoscopy and interventional pulmonology. And for today, we discuss creating and building a successful lung nodule robotic bronchoscopy program.
Hi, my name is Chin Fan. I'm the Director of Interventional Pulmonology Program and Medical Director of the IP Services at UC Davis, which is in Sacramento. UC Davis is an academic medical center, level one trauma. We have about 650 beds. Our group has four IP physicians. We have two robotic platforms, the ion shape sensing, one in the endo suite, and then one on the OR. And we also have fortunate to have leadership invest in the CO spin 2 as well.
Hey guys, my name is Hassanan Bawadam. I'm a board-certified interventional pulmonologist, currently direct the Interventional and Robotic Bronchoscopy Division at Advocate Aurora Medical Center in Kenosha, Wisconsin, about 10 miles on the border of into Wisconsin from Illinois. Also, just got appointed as the Associate Program Director for the Pulmonary Fellowship Program at Rosalind Franklin University of Medicine and Sciences in North Chicago. I practice in Aurora Medical Center Kenosha, which is a 75-bed community hospital. Well, now now an academic center, actually, with 59 subspecialties. I've been practicing here over a decade as a pulmonologist intensivist, went back to fellowship, and we have a unique setup where it's a community hospital, but we've got all the infrastructure and toys, a brand new IP suite, ion robotic platform, and a CS spin as well.
My name is Brad Eichard. I'm one of the advanced bronchoscopists at Cone Health in Greensboro, North Carolina. I came to Cone in 2019. This was pre-pandemic, and we were in a program doing about 55 to 60 or so navigational bronchoscopies with an EMN platform before. We had a well-established multidisciplinary thoracic team there, including interventional radiology, thoracic oncology, as well as our pathologist and interventional radiology at the time of joining the group. There's two of us that do advanced bronchoscopy. We're bringing on a third currently. And, you know, we're in the heart of the tobacco belt of North Carolina. Approximately 20% of lung cancer diagnoses for the entire state occur in our catchment area within the center of North Carolina. And we're just glad to be here. And thanks for having us. We also use the ION robotics platform, as well as the CIOS three-dimensional imaging.
It's an absolute pleasure to have the three of you on this podcast. Today, we'll be discussing how to create and build a successful lung nodule robotic bronchoscopy platform, and the three of you exemplify of what that means. So in the space of less than a year, less than 2 years, you'll be able to achieve incredible success, both in terms of setting up your teams, getting a lot of diagnostic procedures, great diagnostic yields. So we want to share your experiences with the community and give tips and advice on how to achieve similar success. So I'll turn to Chin first. In the past year, what do you think has been one of your program's greatest successes, and how did you achieve that?
I was actually looking at our background of what we were doing previously, and like many other, you know, colleagues in the field of peripheral navigation, we were using electromagnetic navigation in 2019, and we just required it. So then in 2022, the challenge and the success was, how could we ask leadership? We just invested in this electromagnetic navigation platform. Now we want to shift over to robotics. And understanding the why of why we wanted to do that, having discussions with the leadership team and the business team at UC Davis is saying, hey, we've been doing this and our results were suboptimal at the time, doing no more than about 30 cases per year. And other systems have been now leveraging robotics, have better success with their patient outcomes, and we can do the same. And when the health system understood that why, they were all in. And because of that, we've been able to transform and revitalize our lung nodule robotic program here at UC Davis and have big outcomes and big success for our patients.
So Brad, you similarly had low case volumes prior to robotics. What do you think your program's greatest success has been over the past year? And any pointers on how you achieved that?
Yeah, absolutely. Honestly, I think our biggest success is the development of the team. Once we made some decisions to move our advanced bronchoscopy cases out of an operating room space and into the endoscopy space, we were able to get staff alignment and leadership alignment around doing more volume. And we were able to do it faster, more efficient, have more patients and cases being done in a day. And by showing that growth, we were able to then leverage our discussions around moving from our existing electromagnetic platform to a robotics platform. And, you know, it started slow, but in all reality, believe it or not, this is one thing that was positive about the COVID timeframe is that there was a lot of freed up space because elective procedures were hence being postponed for a while. And so since there was more available space to do time, there was time for a pulmonologist to start using some of that for diagnostics. And those were all considered things that were important at the time, you know, obtaining a tissue diagnosis for malignancy. So we were able to do that and then expand our referral base by making sure that our primary care providers and our oncology teams and everybody knew what we were capable of doing and what we were trying to do. And I think that was probably our kind of defining moment when our team and the endoscopy team really started to see what we were capable of doing and what kind of care we were delivering and trying to celebrate that. So I think my biggest advice is once you start is, you know, you got to invest in your team and then you got to celebrate with your team. And that's what I try to do on a week to week basis. And I kind of give feedback too. We've got a couple of news stories and some coverage on our cases and have our patients' stories being told into the community. And that helps them because I think the endoscopy team and the people that are helping us do this feel proud about their work. And when people feel proud about their work, they're engaged and it's better for patient care.
Yeah, I think that's really important, both what Chin said about engaging leadership. And then, as you said, Brad, the importance of harnessing that team and moving on to the next level. And I think, Hasnain, you gave a pretty exciting example during TOP, the TOP summit, on how you're able to secure your cone beam CT. Maybe you could share that story with us, as well as any great successes over the past year that you'd want our audience to be aware of and how you achieved it.
So true. So echoing what Chin and Brad said and the team spirit, I could just continue on that and say that my program's greatest success, honestly, has been my administration team and my endoscopy colleagues. My vision actually became their vision. And we built this from scratch together. Having one bronchoscope before I went back to IP fellowship and coming back and establishing an IP program was a big ask. Getting from 3-member POM crew to now 18, and from a 2-member IP crew to now 8 and still growing. So I think that's all team spirit. We recently inaugurated a state-of-the-art IP Stryker suite that's second to none for Stryker with regards to its layout and blueprint. We just achieved 300 successful ion procedures and just hired a second interventional pulmonary colleague from University of Illinois Chicago who just started this week. So echoing the same point, the two biggest successes from my standpoint was getting my admin team to believe that a CIOS would definitely, an augmented imaging would definitely help bolster a diagnostic yield in trying to chase nodules that our interventional radiology colleagues deferred to us. That was a big ask from my department. We went down from an almost over 100 interventional radiology procedures in lung nodule space to going down to less than 10 in 2022. And if we were to pick those nodules up, we better made sure that we got answers. And that was the challenge. And kind of moving into, we started doing our cases in the actual interventional radiology cone beam suite. So to answer your question, when you said what I discussed at top, we would drag our ion robotic platform and all the LED suites from one part of the building to another to have the time after 5 p.m. to do our IP cases in the IR suite where we had the ceiling mounted cone beam. And it was a big ask, and my team did it for about 4 to 6 months, after which the admin team realized that it was important to invest in our own augmented imaging, and we were able to secure Cirrus. But this was a big ask to ask our IR colleagues to give us time. So again, I'd like to tell the audience and that if you don't have any modality of augmented imaging, you always have the availability of some kind of cone beam in your cardiac space or your interventional radiology space, that you could always ask for time to start with some of your difficult cases. And that's when vision becomes reality and your admin teams believes in your efforts.
Definitely. And Chin, I want to pull you back in here because you mentioned the importance of engaging leadership. Maybe you could dial it back for us. You know, when you were starting out, obviously the three of you have achieved incredible success. For some, it's like, wow, it's, you know, gargantuan what you're able to do. But you have to start somewhere. So maybe tell us, how did you start and how do you build it up? And what were you doing to make sure that the path was laid forward?
So there's this quote that many people have heard is, you know, if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, you go together. And when I was designated the director of the IP program, I realized that you have to start making relationships with people that can help your program grow, because you can't do everything by yourself. And so that means it's a necessity to have a relationship with C-suite and the leadership team. And really the hero of the story should always be centered around the health system's goals. And that's always should be patient-centric. Try to get to patients as quick as possible, get their diagnoses, get them treatment. And what is the problem each of us have with respect to our programs? And we've all decided, hey, we could do better with robotic programs, with our lung nodule programs. So how do we craft that vision together? And once everybody on the leadership understands this is our why we want to do this, now let's start layering our asks. You know, do we need a platform for advanced imaging? Do we need more support for FTDs for certain staff? Do we need a robotic system, et cetera? And then once you start looking at the data and the metrics, how can we hold ourselves accountable to achieve those things?
Yeah, I think that is absolutely key. The why has to come first, and then focusing, and then getting them to buy into their vision. Brad, your situation is slightly different from that of Hasnain and Chin. You aren't formally trained in interventional pulmonology, to my knowledge. How did you achieve your success? There's some folks who believe that interventional pulmonology should be developing these systems, but there's a definite push for regular pulmonologists to become advanced bronchoscopists and to serve their communities. What was your gateway?
Yeah, absolutely. I trained in Southwest Virginia. We trained at a place that did not have IP fellows. And as you can imagine, in that part of the country, also there is a significant lung cancer disease burden. So it was something that was very common for us to see. Even in our area here, I moved about an hour and a half or so south to practice in North Carolina. But, if you have a lung nodule in the chest, it's most likely a malignancy. You know, we have such a high incidence. And so I think that was the start. And then I came to a place that needed this work, right? And we needed to grow that work. And so something that I was always interested in. And as we started growing the navigational program, we started seeing more and more colleagues across the country to adopt robotics platform and trying to stay in that space and see what was happening. I wanted our health system to make sure that we were ahead of the curve and not behind, because I think all of us on the call today and discussion today could see where we were going with diagnostics related to robotic bronchoscopy and advanced imaging. And the sooner we can make the diagnosis, the sooner we can help patients. And lung cancer has been something that's I've been passionate about for a long time. Even before I went to medical school, I've had family members touched with lung cancer. And so when you see a part of that and you see how that affects families, that's something that's been important, including lung cancer screening. And going back to something that Chen said about leadership alignment, for me, it has been around developing a entire program, not just about the development of the robotics and doing more procedures, but what are we doing for our community? And when you pair that and try to have these discussions with leadership, not just about jumping up and down and say, I want to do more procedures, I need more space, I need more capital. It's about, well, how does that translate to, for example, my health system's True North metrics of healthy communities? And one of those that we're leveraging is screening. And what does lung cancer screening look like in our health system, and what are we doing to grow that? And pairing that together is important. And then I think having a boss that understands what you do. And I think that's super important, right? And, you know, just this past week, my boss knocked on the door, came in during my case day on Tuesday just to see what I was doing. And it's good to have people to come by. I've had leadership from C-suite down come into the hospital and watch us do cases. And when you get that kind of investment and buy-in, they understand, they get to see the patients before and after and what we're doing and able to tell their story. And I think that is what is very impactful when you have a good patient anchoring discussion about how are we really changing people's lives.
Yeah, I think that relationship with the C-suite and reflecting it back on the patients is absolutely key. Hasneen, I want to pull you in here because you decided you wanted to go back and get more training. Most of us do our fellowship, we get out into the community or start working, but you decided to go and back into fellowship training. Maybe you could share with us what motivated you to do that, and then reflect back on what Brad was saying, because I imagine you had similar experiences where you really realized the importance of working with your leadership and partnering with them. I think you used the words, getting hold of someone and getting up to some mischief.
You're right. You've got a pretty good memory, I must say that. So I was at this place in Kenosha, the same place, Aurora Hospital, Kenosha, for about a decade. And I've always wanted to do some kind of advanced bronchoscopy or get extra training. And life and family just took forefront. But at some point, I decided that if I either do it now or stop talking about it. So we decided to take the plunge as a family. It was peak COVID times. And I was fortunate I matched at UCSF. So the reason I wanted to do that is because I felt that at a community hospital in Kenosha, I would have a better chance of leverage in coming back and asking for more capital, more equipment, a more sense into my admin team as to the need of a robust lung cancer screening program and a nodule program to be built here. I knew that we were kind of foraying into not just diagnostics, but the vision was probably at some point dabbling into therapeutics as well. And I was the only pulmonologist at this place for about a decade. And so if I had to have the robust training to come back, I would rather get it all done correctly. And so that was the reason. Little did I know that the time I would match in December of 2019, and then 2020 March was when COVID would hit, but it all panned out well and it played out well. But to answer your second question as to how did the admin team believe in it, and you're right, I do say this often, it takes two people to create mischief. You need to have two to have the same sense of vision. I was very fortunate to have my CEO and the president of the hospital, who actually ascended her career from the time that I started here as soon graduating out from my Palmquist fellowship, and the trust and the belief that she had in me just grew over time. So when I came back and I asked for the capital and I asked someone to share my vision with me of building a lung nodule program, building an IP program in a community hospital with just 75 beds and 59 subspecialties, it was taken well by her with the investments that I needed. I must tell you this to the audience listening, that our greatest challenge in a small rural Kenosha has been to gather the IP team and to retain a good, robust IP team. And I would like to stress on that, because the theme here has been teamwork. The theme here has been to, if you want to go further down, it's not walking alone. And so I actually had my admin team believe in the IP assistant program that is run out of California that trains your IP techs, whether it's an RT-based program or a surgical endotech program. And I have had all of my IP techs join this executive online IP assist program. And it's made a significant difference in how the program's built, the understanding of the various IP procedures. And they graduating out of this program and getting an IP assistant degree, they come back and they're well versed with the technical and the know-hows of the different procedures. So that significantly helps. And the second challenge that was for me in this place was to have my thoracic oncology team, that I don't even have thoracic on site at Kenosha. It's at a place 45 miles north at a place called Aurora St. Luke's in Milwaukee. And to have my thoracic surgeons believe in a small town Kenosha now starting this nodule program, are we going to take cases away from them? Are we going to work together cohesively, collaboratively, more than competitively? So to participate in the multidisciplinary tumor boards on Friday morning was the key. And I actually recommend that. And I'm sure Brad, specifically being an advanced bronchoscopist, would echo the same, is to participate in the tumor board, to have your radiation oncologists, your med-oncs, your radiology guys, your thoracic guys believe in you discussing these nodules and saying you can go after them, and believing that these do not need to wait for another 2 or 3 month CT scan. It's conspicuous enough that it needs to be addressed. That's what helps build their trust in you and even further out your referral base.
Yeah, I think what I'm hearing here is the importance of teamwork and also of mentorship. And I'll just give a shout out to Chin. Chin's obviously working at a very, you know, prestigious institution at UC Davis, but still took the time to come proctor us at Olympia. All of us are not interventionally trained, but did a phenomenal job making sure that our program got started off. So Chin, I want to turn back to you. You obviously have the benefits of working at an institution with a lot of resources, but those resources are under a lot of competition. How do you go about motivating to your leadership as to the next step, and why is it important? And then how do you track your success so that they know that they're getting a good return of investment?
So one of the problems in general is when you grow these programs with, you know, lung nodules, is you create more access, you create this funnel, then all of a sudden you have this backlog. And so really success comes from finding opportunities, you know, in problems. So one of the stories is that as we started to book all our cases here with the robotic, you know, assisted bronchoscopy platform with Ion, is we had other cases we had to do too in our interventional pulmonary space, and those were getting backlogged. And so we needed to create more anesthesia time. And during this time at UC Davis, you know, we didn't have enough anesthesia support. So I had to go back to my leadership team after people have told me before, Chin, you're not going to get more anesthesia time. We're down a lot of FTVs. Other programs need the anesthesia too. So how are you going to ask for this? So what we did was we looked at the data. Data drives decisions. We looked at how much anesthesia time we were using, over 100% already, and what we're expected to do with the growth, with the anticipated volume by adding Ion. And based on that, if we didn't fill these cases, there'd be a backlog. And so for the first ask, it took me actually several months to get anesthesia. But then the second ask, when I needed more anesthesia time, it only took me a couple weeks. And so when you present data and you leverage it with your successes, it allows leadership to say, okay, we got to make the decision now what's right for the patient. So that's where we really move forward. And all of us here have really leveraged this growth in lung nodules in the robotic space to then grow our other parts of the programs. So that's how, you know, I would recommend doing it when you're starting out, is look at your baseline data and use that how to predict your ROI and your growth going forward.
So I'm going to ask you a couple more questions on that, because this is what really, some folks are like, what data do, how do I collect the data? What data? And, you know, how do I put it together in a cohesive form so that my administrators know what I'm talking about? How do I, you know, take away some of the medical jargon and make it palatable so that it's easy to act on? I'll ask Chin first, and then I'll push it over to Brad, because I know he also had a similar challenge with block time. So Chin?
So for our block time, we just looked at specifically our anesthesia, you know, usage rate, you know, how much anesthesia we were allotted and then how much we were using. And, you know, based on that, we calculated our usage rate of, you know, over 100%, and then we presented that. But when it comes to just collecting data for your lung nodule program, you know, look at, you know, the volume, how many you're screening, how many incidentals are you detecting? You know, what's your, look at your catchment area, what's your loss, you know, outside of the community? With your established programs, with your current, what systems are you using? What's your diagnostic yield? How many are stage four? How many stage three, two, one, et cetera? And most of us have been using Excel sheets. We've manually been doing it. So at UC Davis, we have a great, actually, data analytics team, and I decided to partner with them and say, hey, how can we do this better from other institutions? How can we auto-extract these efficiently? Just using, leveraging EMR, how could we build codes or algorithms so that we can automatically extract the data without having to manually do that? How can we minimize that? So that's what we're currently doing here at UC Davis to further enhance building our data dictionary going forward for future research.
Yeah, sometimes you got to start off at the basics of Excel and then you build yourself up. Brad, you also mentioned, I didn't want to hear about your block time, but you also mentioned that you decided to move from the OR to the endo space to increase your efficiency. Why didn't you share with our audience why that happened and what process that involved?
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with Chin's statements about data to drive, you know, driving decisions. You know, we do that day in and day out when we were in the ICU, right? We make decisions on diuretics and urine output and all of the above when we see patients. It's no difference when you think about our efficiencies in an operative space. I started by pulling our data on case times in the operative space. So we were in the main OR. Average case times were 175 minutes. Some of them had as long as 40-minute turnovers. As you can imagine, you know, it's harder to get in and out of the double doors at the end of the white hallway, right? So it just takes more effort to get in and out of an operating room space for the patients. And then not to mention, it's a high cost place. So I had them look at the cost of case in an operating room space. And then I had projected our costs in endoscopy and our average case times. And then we started doing them over there and tracking our time. So I think a really big milestone for us was having our endoscopy staff in January of 2021 do the very first bronchoscopy they'd ever done. And when I first had the meetings, they were like, yeah, I think we can probably do maybe one or two a week. And so we've obviously changed from one or two a week. We're doing about 8 or 10 a week. So it's really amazing. But we've moved to a 63-minute on average case time. And, you know, our average turnover time is about 19 or 20 minutes. And, you know, we do 5 and sometimes 6 cases in a day. And it's once you start showing that, and then our reimbursement, of course, that's important to the health system to look at the cost per case being cheaper in the endoscopy unit as well. So those were big moments that we started to see things. And then you layer that with your patient experiences, sharing those patient stories, and, you know, looking at our lung cancer registry. So every health system should have a lung cancer registry that they report out to their local state authorities. But we were able to look at our stage one lung cancers. I recently got some data back. But since 2017, before I joined our health system, we've had a 6% increase in stage one lung cancer diagnoses each year. So it's pretty impressive to see that when you start doing that work and seeing the volumes, you know, and we also, something else we haven't talked about, we've talked a lot about lung cancer, but, you know, probably my largest growing population of utilization for robotics is our oligometastatic disease patients or people that have other thoracic malignancies too. So starting to reach out more to our GI oncologists and folks like that that have patients that have abnormal findings in the chest cavity. And so we starting to leverage and pulling more cases from our radiation or from our interventional radiologist. And so that's been a big difference too.
Yeah, that data piece is just so important. Hasneen, maybe you could comment on that. How did you convince interventional radiology that you would do a bit better job? And what other data did you use to speak to your administration?
Actually, no, not much convincing was required for interventional radiology because it pays them the same amount to do a lung biopsy, a kidney biopsy, or a liver biopsy. But it takes them an hour to do a lung biopsy versus 15 minutes for a liver and a kidney biopsy. So per time, the amount of income generated for a lung nodule biopsy is much less for them as opposed to dabbling their space into liver or kidney or the vascular space. At the same time, less complications and having much more of a staging platform here with us doing it than them doing it. It was just basically meeting down. And again, it comes down to relationship. Like the interventional radiology team is somebody that I knew over a decade. And I had to just sit down with them and run out the metrics and the finances. And they were happy. And they actually have grown more, doing more of the vascular, renal biopsies and so forth than doing the nodular space. The one thing that we have not done as sophisticatedly as Chin and Brad have done is look much into data analytics because it's a smaller community program. But I'll tell you the two things I want to talk about. A, we have just begun opening up to the intuitive data analytics team that does the data calculation for your institute. So just something to share out there that they actually help us look at the state shift as to what the state shift has been. That the time from referral to the time to being seen in clinic, to the time to biopsy, and the time to treatment. So these are numbers that are pulled off automatically through your medical record platform or your Epic, especially if they have an agreement with your institute. And they do have an agreement with our institute from the Da Vinci side, so it's easier to now pull up data from the Ion side. So that's something that we are going to foray into. And as Brad mentioned, a 6% increase in stage one, that's significant. And that's what we want to look at. Two things I can tell you that we've looked at is the absolute number of growth relative to what we were doing before. So we've grown over 300% in terms of volume of procedures done from 1 year to year two, and that's significant translation into reimbursements for the hospital. The other thing that we've looked into is looking at our tube in to tube out time, and we're not yet there with the 19 or 20 minutes of room turnaround that we hope to reach someday. But we've pretty much gotten into a 60 minute tube in to tube out time for our procedures, and that kind of helps get extra or excess number of patients into that day, and going from 3 to 4, and now we are up to 5 cases a day, and hopefully more. And that has been possible, I must say. We tried something called the two-tech method. We were only a one-tech method, but we've realized that if you have two techs using two needles and one going out to kind of run the cyto or the cell block or the slides or the touch preps while the other one's kind of helping out with this. This has definitely translated into the total procedural time being reduced. So they're kind of running a little bit of a baby trial right now, looking at the next 40 cases and seeing if the two-tech method actually helps reduce further our procedural time and squeeze in an extra procedure that's needed.
Yeah, I think you're referring to the whole efficiency, and that's really, really important. And I really like the fact that you mentioned, you know, the importance of looking from time of initial CAT scan to pulmonology assessment to biopsy to staging. And really importantly, our goal is to stage shift here to improve patients' outcomes. The three of you have been really fantastic and generous with your time and sharing with our audience some really incredible insights. I do want to give each of you all the opportunity to distill and give some really important pearls that you would want someone that's about to launch their lung nodule program to be cognizant of. Any advice that you would give them, anything that you learned building up that you're like, you know, maybe I shouldn't have done that. Maybe that was a bad mistake, but you'd say, you know, definitely pay attention to this. So any parting words, and then after that, I'll ask you all each to, if you have any questions for each other, to go into that. So I'll start with Chen.
So I would say that my pearl or my tip is that I'm biased. So like everybody here, I am fortunate to work with the best team in the health system. But it takes a physician champion. You have to be that champion for your program and build that story and align your vision with your leadership team. Because if you're not that champion, you don't have that commitment to take your program to the next level, it's not going to go anywhere. So you have to be that champion. And sometimes you have to drag people along the way. But you have to make it understand, you know, why you're doing it. And at the end of the day, it's all about the patient outcomes.
I think that's what's so incredible about the three of you. All of you are phenomenal physician champions, and that's why you'll have succeeded as well as you have. Brad?
I'm going to steal some of Hasnan's words. You got to find a person to make some mischief with. It took me a while. It's a slow process. You know, so I think the message is that building a program like this is not going to happen overnight. And you've got to have a strong voice. I think my voice and pretty much in every presentation I give, in every meeting that I have, whether it's with staff or it's with our endoscopy team or it's with leadership, is an anchoring bias around the patient. Right. So I think it's real important to be able to do that. One of the things that I did during the presentations for making plans for adopting a robotics platform is showing a picture of three different stage one lung cancers. Right. And I let them choose which one they would want. Of course, everybody in the room chose the 10 millimeter ground glass lesion. And they're like, I want that one. Well, you know, guess what? We right now don't have any ability or platform to biopsy that at this institution. And they all looked at me like, really? What do you mean? And I'm like, yeah, we can't actually go after the lung cancer that you guys want to have versus some of these others. So kind of breaking it down to where people can see and understand what that is going on. And I think the mantra that I want to try to do it for, you know, for the patients and everything and for the health system is, can we do it faster, cheaper, better, and safer? And if we can do those things, I think that the health system and patients will always align to that kind of mantra, you know, around faster, cheaper, better, safer. And I hope that we can have programs as successful as mine has been and our team here at Cone and successful as Chen, Hasnan's across the country. And feel free, of course, to reach out to us or however, any way that I can help, for sure. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, communication is so key. And yes, everyone wants the less than 10 millimeter lung nodule. And that's what we should be aiming for our patients as well. Hasnain?
You know, honestly, I echo exactly what Chen and Brad said. You gotta believe in your vision. You gotta, you know, stay firm. I'll go one step further and say, don't take no for an answer if you actually believe in your vision and your cause. I'll just give you a small example of that. November is Lung Cancer Screening Month that's coming up. And I've been asking them to do the $49 lung CT screening program for our community. And just like you have the heart scans, it's a $49 promotion right across the country. Anyone can go and get a $49 cardiac calcium CT scoring scan. So for people who don't meet the age requirements, you're not 50 to 80 or 55 to 80. You've not had the smoking pack years. If anyone wants to get a lung CT screening and you feel that you're at a risk, a $49 scan for the month is something that I'm trying to promote at my hospital, and I'm pitching it at every meeting. And it's been 3 meetings so far, and I'm hopeful by end of October, it'll be 7th or 8th meeting and somebody will hear me out and institute that. So if you believe in your vision, and if you feel that that's the way to actually make things go forward and be a champion for your program, then don't step down. Finally, somebody will believe in you and you will make it happen.
Yeah, that's a really ingenious plan. I like it. I'm going to open it up now for maybe 5 minutes or 10 minutes and just see if you'll have any questions for each other. So please go ahead.
More than a question, I have a compliment. I've always enjoyed this group. I've been fortunate to be with this group, including you, Dominic, on many platforms before. And I feel each of us in our own space are doing what's needed. I can't but stop applauding all of you and what you've done in your parts of the geography. So kudos to you guys and keep up the good work.
I also agree with Hasnan. I just want to thank my team, because if it wasn't for my team, there would be no success, like many of us here. And then also just thank Dominique for this opportunity to just speak on behalf of UC Davis and my program here at the Interventional Pulmonary Program at UC Davis Health. And then thank the Society of Advanced Bronchoscopy for this opportunity just to bring different health systems together, see what we're all doing for our communities. And if each one of us can do it, other communities, can do it as well. And it takes all of us together to be champions to really move the needle forwards when it comes to lung cancer care.
Absolutely. Once again, similar words, but thanks for the Society of Advanced Bronchoscopy for having us, and Dominique for interviews today. I echo the same words. I think something as a collective, as colleagues across the nation, if we can work to help raise awareness for lung cancer screening, it's one of the lowest utilized screening tools. So I'm definitely jealous of Hasnan and his group, how expansive their lung cancer screening program has become. I reference his story from top quite often. So I thank everybody for everything they've done, and I appreciate being a part of this team.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure having the three of you. And I think, as they said at the TOP Summit, be the catalyst for change. And the three of you have definitely exemplified that. For our audience, we've discussed creating and building a successful lung nodule robotic bronchoscopy platform. Very grateful to Chin, Brad, and Hasnain for sharing their insights. And we'll probably get them on a separate podcast individually just to discuss the workflow and individual challenges going forward, because I feel like there's a whole lot more that you guys could offer. Thank you all.
A big thank you to Drs. Fan, Eichard, and Bowerdam. And a big thank you to all of you for listening to This Is The Way podcast. I'm Dominic Pepper, for the Society of Advanced Bronchoscopy.